Hello and welcome to the GM Party. Today's episode is a bit of a throwback to our pilot season. This is a one-on-one talk with Alex Roberts recorded in 2017, previously available only on YouTube. We'll be talking in the show about conferences, motivation and organization, and some early game design talks that later grew into two games. Alex's amazing game, StarCrossed, shipping soon from Bully Pulpit, and the bare beginnings of my upcoming game, Mic Drop, which will likely appear at Metatopia 2018. If you're planning on attending, definitely stop and say hi. Enjoy the show. And we are live with GM Party. I'm here today with Alex Roberts, the host of the Backstory podcast of the OneShot RPG Network. And we're here to sort of talk the post-Metatopia talk and decompress a little bit and figure out what we're doing and figure out what we're going to be doing.
Yeah, I can't wait to figure that out.
Yeah, never works. But, we'll give it a shot. Mm-hmm.
Were you testing something at Metatopia? Did you bring something to fiddle
no,
with?
No, I unfortunately wanted to go, but I wasn't able to attend this year.
So, that's okay. Mark, there will be other times.
Pushing it heavily, and he made it so enticing, but I just couldn't make it. I had some family stuff that I had to deal with.
Yeah, life, right? You can't hit them all. It's really hard to figure out, like, which conventions are worth the like amount of fun versus how much it costs and how like stressful it is. And like, you know, I only have so many vacation days or whatever. And yeah, it's not easy. You can't do them all.
Yeah. I got into the sort of idea of going to Metatopia because of GM Party. And that was maybe only a couple of months before Metatopia, and that's just not enough leave time for me to work new things into my life.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully next year it should work out nicely, and I'll be able to make time for it and meet everybody in person.
Yeah, I mean that's like one of my favorite convention things is just getting to say like, oh, such and such on Twitter. Oh, we've been speaking on Google Plus for like years and now we finally meet. It's a wonderful feeling. Well,
it's really nice to connect online, but in person is another thing entirely.
It totally is.
You get that weird in person, I know you, but I've never actually physically met you awkwardness.
Yeah. It's like, I recognize you. Do you recognize me? Oh, no. Are we good? Yes.
Do you look like your avatar or not?
Yeah, I know. Like, I respect there's so many good reasons to not have your face as your avatar. But, like, if that's the case, I do feel like you should carry, like, a little mask with, like, the picture of the frog or whatever that you have.
Well, I used to have the Nick Twitch on Twitter, mm-hmm. which was really problematic when Twitch TV launched. So I gave that up, but at that time I wanted a hat that had like at Twitch written on it. So that would have been great, but
yeah. But then Twitch comes along.
Yeah. And having at Andy Bredan is not, it's too long.
Doesn't have the same, same ring to it.
But I was so early in the Twitter, close.
Yeah, really. Twitch.
I looked at lifetimes of accounts and I missed out on actually snapping up the at AB account by 1 week. I literally could have gotten it and it was registered like a week after I registered mine.
Dang. So. That's like at fart levels of just like pure like tech, like right time, right place, you know? Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so let's, the whole thing about GM Party is that we talk about games that we're making and problems we run into while making the games or even just come up with ideas. So far, the shows have been a lot of, I have this idea, what do you guys think? And then everybody gets excited or not excited and then it becomes an amazing thing. I'll get started then.
Yeah. Toss something at me and I'll just set it on fire. I'll just tear it apart. That's awesome. What I do.
I'll start with like one of my crazy newer ones that I have not. This is not the right file. Oh crap. yeah, one of my crazy ones that I haven't built out yet. So I'll start with a bit of backstory. So I have this campaign that I run. It's a Monster of the Week campaign, like literally the game Monster of the Week. Mm-hmm. All the main characters in all the player characters in the game are members of a band. So it's like a Josie and the Pussycats kind of experience. There's only one episode up so far on the Indices podcast, but I have one in edit queue. I'm really slow at editing. I went ahead and sort of, to inspire the players, built out playlist for the band. So like, you know, building out on Spotify and like finding the kinds of things that were really inspirational for them. And then as people, you know, came into to my place to play the game, I had it playing in the background, just subtly, and the same kind of music that the band would play. And then I started thinking that I had a lot of fun sort of curating this sort of playlist. So I built a social media page for the band and built out a Twitter profile for the band and all this extra stuff. Yeah. For this fictional band that doesn't exist except for in the game itself. And this was entertaining enough that I thought, well, this part could be a game in itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I was starting to think of how I could sort of make that into a game. And I came up with an idea of, it's almost like a play by email kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of even like a collaborative wiki kind of experience or something, where you would have this sort of shadow social media network that would actually be populated entirely by fictional characters. And you'd play this game through this, I don't know, a bunch of Twitter accounts that had special tags or something.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea exactly how I'm going to make it work or how it's going to cohesively go together, or even if this is just something fun. But that's the core. That's where I'm at.
To me, what I really like about it is the possibility of, like in the band example that you mentioned, I really love the possibility of there starting to be fans of the band, and then there become people who don't know that it's a game where they do on some level, and they get like the band t-shirt, and they even like talk about it IRL as like, oh, you haven't heard of these guys? Yeah, they're like so underground. They actually haven't even released an album. So like, that's really appealing to me. The idea of playing something that is pervasive online, and so you actually incorporate people who don't realize that they're playing the game and like their response to things, that is a very appealing idea to me. Like, I like the idea of this being on like a public Twitter account.
Mm. Yeah, the one other idea I had to go along with it, and that just sort of coalesced just now. Mm-hmm. I had sort of a hazy clue there. Sort of wrapping the band experience up into performances. And that those are, this is how this works with the Monster of the Game campaign, is that they play the game every week, or, well, not that often, but we play the game, and then something happens in the game, and that becomes canon, right? They go to this gig, and something happens with this gig, and they deal with this monster or these vampires or these, I don't know. The first episode was, it was a modern day siren that lured airplanes to their doom. So that was, so that became sort of what the band experienced. They went to this particular place and sang these particular songs at this dive bar, and being able to sort of schedule a show in the shadow Twitter, so to speak, being able to schedule a show, and then the actual show is maybe even a LARP experience. So people could show up at the show and there's the band, and you could be the band at the show.
You have got to find, and if you can possibly somehow play Slayer Cake by Evan Torner and Kat Jones, which is a LARP about being about being a bunch of metal bands at this battle for the bands. And so you go off into little groups, and you have there's a hair metal and a glam rock and a black metal band. And so you form all these little bands, and then your whole thing, you don't actually perform music, obviously. Your whole thing is just describing how cool your show is, because you're so into the metal aesthetic. And so I had a friend who was in this really intense, super gothic metal thing. And so one of the women in the band just played a bunch of beasts that were kept in cages, and she was whipping them. And so, and their growls were the music. And anyway, so the whole thing is about describing and then enacting sort of this performance. And what enables people to do it, because that sounds terrifying to a lot of people for really good reasons, is that while you play these sort of rival bands who are competing, but while your band is competing, while they're performing, all of the other players turn into an incredibly enthusiastic audience. And your job as an audience member is to just lose your mind at how much you love this band, and you're so excited to see them, and they're rocking out so hard. And so you just feed them with so much energy from the audience that it enables their stuff. Oh my gosh, people get really, really dressed up for this LARP, which is awesome. But I love the idea that you could do this sort of live action component, and then you have this pervasive online role-playing thing that goes on between performances.
Yeah, I like the idea. I feel like it's the sort of social media component that comes along with the sort of bridges between the performances might sort of make an interesting campaign LARP.
Yeah, right? Yeah, and then you're in this band, and you are this character, and maybe after a while you leave this band and join this other band, and that could be such a huge dramatic thing. And it would all get played out between physical presence sort of events on this online role-playing component. Think of how much, it's super fun to come up with band names, right? So think of how much fun it would be to come up with your MySpace page or whatever people do now instead of that, your Bandcamp page, except there's no music on it. Exactly. Yeah. Your SoundCloud page that just doesn't have any tracks, just for in your band logo and your album covers and your Twitter page, and you make tweets that are from the band.
Well, I even did with the Monster of the Week. So the band's called Blood's Blood. So I said, we were joking around on social media about it. And they came up with some song titles during the gameplay. And I said, okay, well, a mechanic in Monster of the Week is that you have luck points that you can spend, right? So I said, first person to give me lyrics for one of the songs gets free luck points. So actually enticing people to build out extra content for the game. But I like the idea of the extra content for the game actually being the game.
Yeah, being part of it and having a real sort of mechanical influence. Mm-hmm. I think there's so much of this happening informally, of people playing the between game or the meta game or whatever, building relationships or doing some small role play things just over email or in their forums or whatever. Or in person, people just saying oh, at our next session, I'm really excited about this that's happening to our characters. Let's make this happen. Like, that's kind of like you're still playing the game, you know? We should design for that. We should consider that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, I guess what I'm down to now is that I'm a rookie with LARP design. So actually building something around a LARP component is super daunting to me.
Yeah.
I play tabletop games like Parlor LARP.
So, there's a lot of getting up and acting out. And
getting people to stay in character as much as possible. And, you know, instead of describing your actions in third person, it's, you know, actually verbalize what your character would say while they were doing something rather than say, I'm doing something.
Right.
That helps. And that seems to communicate well to players, but I'm often finding that I'm guiding them rather than having people automatically know what they're doing. And the LARP community in this town, my town here, London, is either buffer or, well, it used to be vampire for a long time. Neither of those appeal to me in any way.
Yeah. I think, like, that's the thing about the LARPs that tend to be really visible tend to be ones that are like campaign LARPs, whether that's a vampire thing or one of the franchises like Dystopia Rising or whatever, because they happen every weekend and they're really consistent and they tend to be run, if not like a business sort of in that mode, if not as like a primary sort of breadwinning thing. So they tend to be really visible and they tend to like advertise and have like a Facebook group and stuff. In my experience, the only way to start LARPing, like, is to either have a friend who's super into it or to just like start like the like sorry to like start like freeform LARPing or like parlor LARPing or Nordic LARPing, whatever you want to call it. These sort of like small contained experiences that are like 4 or 5 people, 2-3 hours in one room. You kind of just have to start doing it. Like, you kind of just have to figure out who wants to play with you, like play like a 3-player game. And then if people have fun, then maybe they tell people and next month you play like a 4-player game and kind of go from there. Like it is a shame that there aren't a lot of like really sort of publicly accessible groups or entry points for people to get into to smaller, more intimate, I guess you'd say freeform LARPs.
So on that note, I have a story that I need to tell you, though.
Please do.
So I went up and met up with a filmmaker friend of mine. Mm-hmm. He's got a studio, and he was showing me some of the stuff that he's filmed lately. And he had a space that he borrowed from a friend of his that is a seamless white video space. So it has the curved walls. So that you have people floating in white when you film them, right? So one of the ideas I had, and I've sort of talked with Jason Morningstar on this, is to run a game of his The Climb, mountain climbing LARP in a seamless white space and film that.
Oh, yeah.
So I talked to my buddy who has all this filmmaking stuff. He's won all sorts of filmmaking awards and all sorts of fancy shit. And it's going to happen at some point.
That's really, really exciting.
That'll be pretty cool. So it's interesting because like there's so much prep that goes into making a movie, right? Like I did a little short film. It ended up being 3.5 minutes and it took like 8 hours of filming.
Yeah, and like a year of your life to set up for and finish, yeah.
Yeah, it's just so much work. But it's really appealing to be able to just say, well, we're running this game for 1 hour and 15 minutes, and at the end of it, we'll have some footage, and we're done. And with any luck, we can just set up a crap ton of cameras and just cut between them, and we'll have something.
Yeah, right? Like, even if it's only 2 minutes long, it could be really, really cool. And then you'd have something when you say, like, here's this weird thing that I do, this super cool, amazing thing that I do that may be unfamiliar to you. It'd be nice to have something to point to and be like, it's kind of like this. Because right now, the LARPs that there's a lot of footage of tend to be either really old school buffer LARPs, in which people are really obviously having a good time, but it's kind of like it is your thing or it isn't. Or they're these like really, really high production value, like gigantic, high budget Nordic LARPs, which is like they're amazing and cool, but that's not the LARPing that I do most of the time. That's like a once a year thing for me, max. And so it makes it hard to explain, right? Like, hey, it's so cool that this huge thing in this gigantic castle in Poland happened, and it was really cool, and a whole weekend, and the costumes are amazing. What I mean by LARP, though, is like me and like three people, and we're just gonna play for an hour and then talk about it for 2 hours. Like, so anyway, so it'd be really, really nice to have something to point to that explains, like, American freeform, for example. This is what the genre kind of looks like, and that sounds like an ideal space to play the climb in. That would be
Oh,
awesome.
yeah, we'll run some good audio and get that storm going, and it'll be, I think it'll be pretty strong.
Yeah,
Just a
totally.
matter of scheduling people.
Yeah, and like doing the sort of upfront work to allow people to be comfortable in front of the cameras too. I played in another Jason Morningstar LARP called Apportionment, which is set in Sarai, which is a sort of space Middle East, and it's basically like a slightly science fictionified version of what happened in Paris in 1919, after the First World War, where a lot of people with not a lot of skin in the game were making decisions about what was going to happen to a lot of people in a very politically tense and unstable situation. So people were doing that, and so I wasn't a diplomat or like a person with economic interest or like a representative of a religious group. I was a reporter, and I discovered that taking footage of people like having their discussions and trying to stay out of the way and be unobtrusive really like made people feel uncomfortable and like kind of like, you know, they would like adjust themselves and like feel kind of weird. But when I shoved the camera directly in their face and said, like, this just happened, how is your faction going to respond to the actions of so and so? Do you believe that it was the fault of such and such that this happened? Like, what's your take on this? People really responded to that. They fucking loved it. They responded just like, you know, it made them like more sure of themselves and their character. It allowed them to like articulate their beliefs, and they said a bunch of inflammatory stuff that I could then run to other characters and like spill the beans on them. And be like, so and so just responded by saying this. Are you gonna put up with that? So it allowed me to fan the flame. So,
Do you have a
so
comment?
yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's your comment? Do you have a comment at this time? Yeah. So. Yeah, filming LARP is such a strange and delicate thing. Like, you really do change it by the act of filming it.
Very much so, yeah. Well, I've heard it sort of described as there's no audience really in LARP. The audience is the participants. So actually being able to introduce the possibility of an audience that's non-interactive is very different.
Yeah, especially because it's an audience that is non-present. Like, I think even if you were viewing a LARP, even if you were not, if you didn't take on a character or whatever, I think you would still be participating in it in some way, as we're like being viewed, being recorded. I don't know, something about it changes people's behavior. But you know, there's lots of actual plays of tabletop games. So just because it changes people's behavior doesn't mean that it ruins it, or that it changed their behavior for the worse, or that it wrecks their experience. It just means that you're going to get something different than what you would have gotten. So you have to be kind of intentional about that.
Anyway, that's my stories. So you mentioned that you brought something to Metatopia.
Yes, I did. I brought basically my first role-playing game, like analog role-playing game, to Metatopia, which is something that I've been thinking about and talking about and kind of half working on for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years probably. Just kind of letting it simmer. And And I've had many conversations about it, and every time I do, people get really excited at the premise. It's basically a hack of Dread in the sense that you use a Jenga tower.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of encapsulating the feeling of dread, you are trying to use the tower to represent a feeling of tension. So that means the tension between the two characters, that they have feelings for each other that they are not really sure if they are going to act on, or if the other person feels the same way. So that there's that kind of tension. But then there's also inner tension between I have these feelings or I want something, but I don't know if it's right. So it's the game of will they or won't they? And your unsureness about the will they or won't they is expressed by this increasingly shaky, wobbling tower. And when you do certain things, you have to, things that, you know, could up the level of intimacy or attraction in the relationship, you have to pull a block. And if the tower falls at the wrong time, things go very badly for you. And even if the tower falls at what might be called the right time, maybe you're getting what you want, but maybe it isn't what you think is right or what you know is right for you in the long run. And maybe it just feels like the right thing. Anyway, that's a very long pitch, but basically it's a game where Jenga symbolizes sexual tension. And I had so much fun running it. At Metatopia, all my players were awesome. They were super engaged, very creative, and it was just incredible. Like I feel like I said, I've been thinking about this game for years, and I feel like I've made this much progress with it. And then in one weekend, I made this much progress with it, and I feel like it's a totally different thing now. And I'm so excited. But
to happen whenever I talk about anything on this show.
But like now I have all this feedback and I learned all this stuff about what my game actually is and what it actually means and what I need to emphasize and what I need to say up front and ask of people. And it's so intimidating to actually jump back in and work on it. It's so intimidating. Like I'm like, I don't even know where to start at this point.
Have you written down all your stuff from all your feedback and
collated? So I happen to have this right here. There's this notebook, which is like, you know, that's my Metatopia notebook. And then I have, let's see, these are all of my playtest feedback forms. So this is what everyone wrote for me after they played their game. And then I have the original sort of design documents, which are... just a bunch of cue cards, really. So that's my game right now. And I have all this like bulk of it. And I'm like, you know, when you're like about to eat, I don't know, a candy apple. And you're just like that's me right now. That's me with my game. I have no idea what I'm going to do with this stuff.
Well, for me, something that helps, well, I'm a video game developer, as a profession. I'm on the programming side, so I'm at the back end, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I deal a lot with game design documents that have been written by other people. However, we have sort of standardized templates in our company for sort of the kind of content that we generate. And typically it begins with market analysis and deciding what kind of player is going to be playing the game. And you start with that perspective first. And then you go on and find the things that appeal to that particular person. Now, these are commercial, like heavily commercial games where you like... it's really sort of narrowing in focus on what's going to make them come back for another place.
Right. Yeah.
So that's not something so much of an issue with role-playing games because they're already committed to trying it out. It's not like, you know, web games where you might get them to try it out for 10 seconds and then you got to deal with it.
Right.
Then they might just go away. It's pretty easy to just find another web page, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, knowing who you want to speak to and what message you want to say might help focus your start. So you want to tell a story about sexual tension, but to what end? Like, to what kind of player?
That's a good point. And something that I also realized at Metatopia is that I ran it, like, it was on the schedule, but I ran it pretty much exclusively for people who are my friends and who were already excited, just that I was bringing something. And I really realized at the end of it that, like, if this game literally only ever exists as a PDF that I personally email to someone, to like random, to people who I know, and they get play it and they say that they enjoy it, I will be really, really happy with that. And that was so liberating to realize that, like, I really just, people who I'm already excited to play with, this is something that I want to put in their hands and like give them this experience that maybe they wouldn't have had otherwise. That's what I'm actually kind of itching for.
Cool.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good focus.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, if you want, you have some pretty good examples of the players you want to like your game. It's for your friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you know the kinds of things intrinsically what they're going to like. So people like that are very unlike your friends. You don't necessarily have to appeal to things that would appeal to them, like, for instance, heavy action, for instance.
I don't need to attach a combat system onto this.
Exactly. And in that way, you can sort of, you know, sort of in the core, your direction and exactly what you want to hone in on. Might help to make those decisions. And as far as getting through all those notes and feedback and playtest stuff, it's really a data entry thing. Put it into a spreadsheet, tag things, try and organize them. If you can assign sort of values to feedback, like this is a really good point. I want to get back to this. This is a suggestion. If I have time, I'll revisit this. This is good for version 2. This is good for maybe another game idea that is on the back burner that I might be able to apply this to. Just being able to sort of rank, not exactly rank, but assign like a utility value.
Yeah, totally. Like, how much do I need to pay attention to this? How much is this? Because there's always going to be people who have advice for you about your game that is for the purpose of making a game that you're not making, right? If someone says about your game that's about like, that's about romance, and they're like, I don't know, it's, you know, this, here's some ways you can make more action-packed. You know, you could be like, okay, well, that's a legit suggestion, but I don't need to do this.
Poison and suicide and, well, it's not the, maybe not the game you wanted.
Right. Or like, I'm making a game for kids, and they're like, here's how you could really make it a lot darker and grittier. You can be like, cool, good, thank you, but I don't need to pay that much attention to what you're after. Yeah, definitely. I think it's going to be just, I think you're right, like getting it all together, because I have sort of standard questions that I ask. And the last question is like, anything else you got? But I did start to notice, because I ran like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 playtests, I started to notice some of the same things coming out. Like, people were asking for clarification on the same things, and people were like, were confused about the same parts, or were like, some things clicked instantly, and some things people would say like, what did you mean by that? Or like, what do you mean by acting on my feelings? Or what do you mean by scene structure or framing or whatever? Mm-hmm. So I know that I wrote all of those things down, but I just want to be able to scan and be like, what did I write down 5 times? You know, like, what did I write down every single time that I played it? or that I ran it. And so that I think would help me focus tremendously. God. Some of it is just finding the time too, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I want to give you one term that my wife uses at her work. Mm-hmm. My wife works at a web dev company, and they have this metric for determining how a priority in their company. Mm-hmm. And it's literally how many fucks are given. If you really care about something, it's lots of fucks. If you don't, it's like zero fucks. So it's a good way of sort of figuring out how much somebody really cares. So how many fucks do you give to this particular piece of feedback?
Right, right.
You need to have that entry in your spreadsheet right there.
You can have like a color-coded sort of fucks level.
Yeah,
totally. I think that would be very useful.
Yeah, I think we have officially broken the swear word metric on this.
Oh, yeah, I probably did that really early on. Sorry, I just...
No, I was on the fence about this channel in general, whether I was going to do cursing or not. And
You know it feels right.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Sometimes it just feels right. There's another thing that came up in my head that I wanted to say, but I forgot.
Anyway. Cool.
Yeah. So I remember what it was. Have you heard of the Dread Gaius of Duke Volku?
No, I have not played it. Well, I've heard of it, but I have not yet played it or even read it.
Last weekend.
Okay. How did it go? Tell me everything about it.
Okay.
It's relevant.
It's the number of players is way more fluid. So with Dread is that it, with the storylines and questionnaires and scenarios that they have, it's really only for like five or six players. Doesn't really work for other counts because you have different tensions with different characters that sort of play off each other. Duke Volku is much more fluid. You have the person who runs the game is the Duke. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the players are the companions of the Duke. So it can be any number of companions. There are questionnaires that behave like Powered by the Apocalypse playbooks. Mm-hmm. So you fill out these questionnaires, they're much more minimal than Dread. You have four questions, I think, might be five. That you just answer yourself. They are not intended to be secret necessarily between you and the other players, although they can. They are not intended to be secret between you and the Duke, because the Duke can exploit that kind of information. Mm-hmm. The Duke also has their own questionnaire so that they can answer a whole bunch of secret things. The Duke has also coerced all the companions to doing his quest with him. Mm-hmm. So there's this antagonism that sort of pervades the whole story. And for the mechanics of gameplay, it's Dread. But when you set up the tower, you pull the blocks from the tower. You know how it's like three blocks per person kind of deal?
Yeah.
To sort of get it into a state that it's a little shaky. Players keep those blocks instead of putting them back on top.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that each playbook has a special ability where when something comes up that meets these certain conditions, the players can opt to take one of these blocks that they got at the beginning of the game and put them back on top instead of pulling a block.
So, oh, I see.
Right.
Yeah,
they have that advantage of when you ask me to do something that is related to stealth, I can just put the block back on top instead of having to risk as much.
Right.
The other thing is that it keeps players who have been knocked out in the game as ghosts.
Yeah.
They're not as active, though.
Mm-hmm.
But what they do is they screw with the other players. So it's, again, more antagonistic competition stuff, which might not fit. But the one challenge that might be interesting is that they can say to another player, instead of pulling a block, here's a block from my cache, and you have to put it back in the tower somewhere, like not at the top. Mm-hmm. So in an empty spot somewhere in the middle, which is kind of brutal.
That's astoundingly difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. And it can be pretty evil.
This is very compelling to me. Mm-hmm. I have a group of people at my work actually, who a while ago, I ran D&D for them. I actually ran Dungeon World, but they wanted to play D&D. So I was like, yeah, no problem. This is that. And then I pitched, they loved it. They totally loved it. It was an awesome time. And then I pitched a couple games after that. They went for Fiasco. So we ran Fiasco last month. They had a lot of fun. But I was thinking the Dredd should be next. And now you have absolutely convinced me that actually the Dredd Gaius of Count Voldku should be next.
That it is pretty good. And you can get the issue with it.
Oh, Worlds Without Master.
It's in volume 10. Mm-hmm. And it's like $4 or something.
Yeah.
But there is no story to speak of whatsoever, just the little questionnaires, which have nothing to do with the quest. Mm-hmm. So make sure you come prepared. It's the only thing provided is there's a thing that the Duke wants, and you have to get to it. That's really it. So,
cool.
There was something else. There's something else. I don't know. I lost my train of thought. It's fine.
That's fine.
It happens. There was another game that I ran that's, it might be good for new players, but it's called Soth. Have you heard of it?
Mm-mm.
So it's pretty crazy. It's like a three session kind of game,
mm-hmm.
Rather than a single session or a campaign. It's pretty much three. All the players play cultists, trying to bring Cthulhu back, basically. They call it Soth.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is they're all cultists in a small town, and they all have their own sort of obligations and family connections. And, you know, they have to go open the library or do whatever they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to run these obligations while still doing the evil things that bring about the end of the world. And the interesting thing about that is that anytime they screw up their obligations or even talk to each other across the table when their characters aren't present, so table talking is not allowed unless they're actually there.
Interesting.
With each other.
Mm-hmm.
If they do that, the GM gets points. And the GM gets to spend these points on different things, sort of like GM actions in Apocalypse games. Well, I guess they don't have points, but and what the points allow you to do is elevate NPCs that have been established in the story to investigator status. So like Arkham Horror, Cthulhu kind of investigators,
mm-hmm.
That make the characters' lives worse or mess things up and play around with things. And there's a whole list of actions you can do. It's super fun and super dark. So if you want something that's like gets that really horror stuff going,
mm-hmm.
it's a good one.
Soth.
Yeah.
I dig
it. I only bring it up because I ran that this weekend, past weekend as well.
And it went well. And was it your first session?
I've run Soth before. Mm-hmm. Just a warning, it's the book is difficult to follow because there's some rules that are only really talked about on the handouts that are given to the players.
Interesting.
So you have to read all everything.
Right, right. That can happen.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have some ideas for I don't even know what to call it, the social media extravaganza, so to speak.
Yeah. I liked it. You said like shadow Twitter. And I like the idea of a collaborative wiki too, because that to me is very like story gamey. The idea that we would all collaborate on a wiki but it's of something fictional. That's really cool.
It would be interesting. Sorry, what was that?
I just said it sounds really cool.
I feel like it would be interesting to have all the stuff that's built out from the shadow Twitter automatically pulled into the wiki. And so you could maybe even link it up with tags and mentions of other people in the thing, and it would still work in Twitter.
Yeah, totally.
That could be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for this reminder to like address this huge pile of papers that's on my desk and get back into tension. It really is wonderful to have someone like, to have a bunch of people and to your face who have made games that you love be like, this game is fun and there's a lot of work to do, but like you should keep at it.
Absolutely.
So that was really inspiring, but then I kind of came home and life attacked. So I haven't really spent any time in it since then. So it's a good reminder that, you know, it's just a matter of just chipping away at it like anything.
Yeah, I need to take my own advice too and just chip
it away. That's the thing about advice that you give. It's usually advice that you also need, in my experience.
It's true. I have this problem of coming up with new ideas and then not doing anything with the old ones. And it's like, oh, that's a cool idea.
And then you just watch it float away. That's because ideas are so much more fun than work, right? Like making something is work. Coming up with stuff, like, you know, just like shower, like, oh, brilliant, amazing. Like that's a great feeling when you don't have to figure out whether or not it works. That's way more fun. Yeah. But then you don't get to actually make them a reality. So
That's true.
It's a trade-off.
Yeah. I think the excitement of making the climb movie, it's probably going to carry that through pretty good.
Yes.
I think that one will happen pretty quickly.
That would be wonderful. I feel like everyone would really enjoy that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to Jason on Twitter about it, and he was saying that some people in Toronto filmed it in a park and did it live in a park at one point in the cold.
It, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
God, that would be brutal.
Yeah.
But fun.
this white room, I think, sounds a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. You can control the heat theoretically.
Yeah. Well, you definitely have to bring parkas and stuff and ski
goggles. Oh, yeah, yeah. Of course. You want the verisimilitude or whatever the word is.
I think that's the word.
Oh, good.
All right.
Yeah, I feel like this was a really nice chat. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you for your input as well. You have any more stuff to say since,
I guess I should be like, hey, follow me on Twitter at @MuscularPikachu. You can also listen to my show, which is called Backstory on the One Shot Podcast Network. So you can go to oneshotpodcast.com and find it there. I've also been doing like a lot of, freelancing for other people's games, doing writing and that kind of thing. So, if you ever have needs in that way, get at me. We could chat. It'd be fun.
Perfect. All right.
Okay, cool.
All right. Well, we'll see you around, I guess, on Twitter.
Yeah, that's right. See you on the internet.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that's a wrap. You can find links to our stuff in the show notes, and make sure to check out berdandy.com, berdandy.com, for links to the GM Party YouTube channel for that live experience and information on how you can support the show. Until next time.